This is the interview with Black Millennials living in Juneau. While this is a very personal and touching moment in time, we would like to inform you that the use of the N-word is mentioned at least 6 times in an attempt to express the gravity of the experience being described. This is not to make any of you, our valued listeners, uncomfortable. In fact, the hope is to help communicate the far-reaching negative impact of using the N-word to describe someone. So then, we hope you'll appreciate the stories of these brave young adult family members. Thank you for tuning in.
Welcome to this week's Black Awareness Association of Juneau's discussion. I'm Christina Michelle Patterson, your host for this segment and moderator for our group conversation. Today, we're going to hear from a few millennials who grew up in Juneau. We're going to share, listen, and hopefully learn from each other's experiences on our topic for today, which is growing up Black in Juneau. We're on Zoom and we'll be popping in and out as schedules permit, so I'll introduce new participants as they come in. Here with us now, we have Janelle Billingsley. Janelle, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me and for asking me to participate in this conversation.
Absolutely. I am so excited that you are here today. Aww. Can you tell us a little bit about
yourself? It's always good to hear from home.
So, Janelle, you call Juneau home and you live on the East Coast now, right?
Yes.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about your life there and what you're doing and all the exciting things that are happening for you?
Sure. Well, I will be honest, it's not that exciting right now. There's a lot going on, but COVID has, you know, really shut this area down. But in general, I am a acquisition and technology development professional, and I've had a long history, a long career with the Department of Defense, and I recently moved to the civilian side of and the federal side of service. So that's what I'm doing right now. That's really what life is consisting of, trying to find and develop and implement innovative solutions to combat this this illness. So that's what's going on in my world right now.
Wow, that is so awesome. It might sound very common and kind of like ho-hum every day to you, but that sounds really exciting to me.
Thank you.
So can you tell me a little bit about what brought your family to Juneau?
Sure.
Yeah. And for those who are listening, I actually know Janelle very well. We grew up together.
yeah. 9333 Northland Street is where I grew up. And Christina used to come over. Yes. And I used to go over to her house.
Absolutely. But it's been so long. I don't think I even remember. Like, so how did you guys come to live here in Juneau, Alaska?
Sure. So my father and ultimately my family is originally from the DC metro area. And I'm going to give a little bit of information history as it relates to like Black America, just because it actually shapes like my experience in Juneau. But the DC metro area is the second highest for the number of Blacks with Black degree holders, and the medium household income or Black household income is about 70 to 75,000. And home ownership rates are about 50%. And the DC metropolitan area in particular has one of the largest Black middle class and Black white collar professionals, to include doctors and lawyers. My father and mother, you know, they lived through the civil rights movement. Obviously it was really big in this area. And they intended what's called, and I'm not sure how many people in Juneau are familiar with this term, but HBCUs. My dad played football, and he was a lifelong Washingtonian. And I think he might have wanted to play for the Washington Redskins at one point in time, but got injured. And so he went on to become an accountant and invested very heavily in real estate in Capitol Hill area of Washington, D.C., and had a number of jobs with the federal government. He worked for the Department of Housing and Urban Development, the Department of Treasury, and he was looking for adventure. He was an interesting city kid who loved the great outdoors. And so he took a position with the Coast Guard. And at that time, in the late 70s, early 80s, the Coast Guard had overseas assignments available in Germany and Alaska. And as I mentioned, he grew up in the great outdoors, and the opportunity to go to Alaska, he could not turn down. So I arrived in Juneau at a very early age, and, you know, really, I feel like started to become more integrated into the community when I started kindergarten at Capital School. So that's how we got to Juneau.
And Janelle, can you just clarify what HBCU stands for those who are not familiar?
Absolutely. So historically Black colleges and universities, that's definitely, like, for those of you who want to know more about Black culture and Black community, it's something that you should probably look up. As many of you guys might be aware of, African-Americans were not allowed to attend white institutions. And even today, you tend to see a lot of Black professionals who actually come out of HBCUs today. So some of the popular ones in the Washington, D.C. area include, like, Bowie State, Morgan State University, Howard University, which is one of the top HBCUs. And so, you know, just to kind of give you a context, like, my parents really valued education and they believed in education. It was very much a part of, woven into the fabric of this community, the community that they were raised in. And it was something that was very, very important to them.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
You're so welcome.
I want to talk a little bit about what it was like going to school here in Juneau. And before we do, I'll just share a little bit about my self and the history of our family as well.
Love it. Yay.
I was actually born in Anchorage, raised in Juneau. We moved here somewhere around maybe age 6 or 7. For mm-hmm. myself, and then my brother was a couple years younger than I was, and military kind of brought our family here. My father was actually born here in Alaska, and his mm-hmm. parents came through the military, and they were stationed outside of Anchorage. And my mother is from Louisiana, and her brother actually mm-hmm. was in the military, and he was stationed somewhere outside of Anchorage. Uh-huh. And when my mom turned 18, the summer that she graduated high school, she actually came to Alaska to visit her brother who was in the Army.
Aww.
And she met my dad during that summer, and that was it. They fell in love, and it's kind of, you know, the rest was history. So,
what a great story.
Yeah. So I've got my dad's side, you know, is from here, and my mom's side's from the South. And then there's me and my brother now, who really don't know anything other than Juneau when it comes to our experience growing up.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's how our family came to be here in Alaska. Yeah. So let's talk about some fond memories growing up here in Juneau as an African American, as someone who looks different from almost everybody else. What were some
right?
of the good
yeah,
times?
Yeah, there was like a good 6 of us, right? Just
right.
kidding. I have so many good memories of Juneau, and I, like I said, to this day, I still consider it to be home. I think one of the things that I just miss, like living in a much bigger, broader metropolitan area is, and one thing that I feel like Juneau prides itself on is its sense of community. And, you know, I really feel like we were really tight knit for the most part. And I mean, we did everything together, right? Like, you know, the same kids that you went to school with or the same kids that you're in activities with. So we really know each other and like love each other like extended family. And so I love it when I do make my way back home, I always run into people as soon as I get to SeaTac airport. Even though I haven't lived in Juneau for like 20 years, like people still, you know, remember and, you know, talk to me. And even to this day, like I get IMs, you know, on Facebook from people from the community that are just reaching out just to see if I'm okay, to see how I'm doing, because they actually care. So I think that's one of
awesome.
The biggest things that I love about Juneau is that sense of community. There's a lot more I could say about that. I also loved, I was thinking about this earlier today. I loved, I loved how there was like certain segments of the population that really embraced what I consider to be like popularized Black culture in the 90s. I feel like there were so many shows and so many music videos, and you know, there, I just felt like so many people identified with Black culture, and you know, through music and through song and through movies. I remember when Sister Act came out, and one of my friends were like, is that what choirs are like at Black churches? I want to become a Christian and go to church just so that I can hear the music. And so I just, you know, there's so many great things about Juno that I love.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And I agree with you. Having gone to California right out of high school here, and lived there, I lived there for 12 years and recently returned to Juneau, I can definitely say the sense of community here is something that is not experienced everywhere. And so, yeah, that's something that I do hold near and dear to my heart about growing up here in Juneau. It's like, it feels like one big family, and you don't, everybody knows everybody kind of,
yes.
But even if they don't, it's still, you know, people look out for each other. And
right.
Yeah, and so that was instilled in me, and you know, and I took that with me when I left, and I learned some hard lessons early.
Yeah, the rest of the world isn't quite like that.
Exactly. And people would be like, where are you from? I'm like, Alaska. They're like, oh, yeah, we get it. We get it. But I mean, just as such a compliment to Juno, I've had several people visit me as an adult since I've been back here in the past 3-4 years. And every time someone comes, most of them come from either New York or from LA. And when they come, they're like, we get it. We get it. Like, we understand
you
so much better.
We understand you and why you're like that.
Exactly. Like, why you're so kind and so friendly and, you know, so just, you know, relaxed. And that's one of the biggest things that they say is, like, there's no litter. Like, it's so clean and fresh here, you know, and everybody is nice. Like, people say hi to you. People smile at you in the stores. Like, the customer service in the stores, like, people actually start a conversation with you and, you know.
Yeah.
And so that's a really big thing that we can take for granted, but yeah, I certainly appreciate it. So let's talk about some of the experiences growing up here that maybe weren't so great in regards to being of color. Janelle, did you experience any racial issues in your childhood here?
So the short answer is yes. I would say that I experienced racism for much of my life in various forms in Juneau. You know, at certain moments of my life, it was overt, while in other situations, it was very covert. And, you know, some of it was just from sheer ignorance, you know, like children repeating things that they heard about people of color. But in other instances, it was very malicious and mean, and perpetuated by adults. So yes, the answer is yes.
Wow. Can you say more about the adults?
Sure. I'll give you an example. I'll give you an example of the first, what I consider to be, you know, other people may not see it the same way, but what I consider to be my first experience with overt racism. And I was 6 years old. And one part of my family background that I didn't mention is that my family is very religious. They're Christian. My dad is a former preacher. And they enrolled me in a private school to ensure that I got a premium education that aligned with my Christian values. And, you know, as I said earlier, I gave you the backstory about how my family's from the DC metro area and that education was very important to them. And, you know, because they saw me as a future professional. So the other thing is that my family, and this is really important because people are going to be like, well, why was her mom there? Why was she able to be there? I had the luxury of having my mom at home for much of my formative years. And so she was free to make frequent visits to school to observe what was going on. And, you know, we can talk more about that later. But again, my dad had invested heavily in real estate and had all this other stuff going. He did a lot of the accounts and did local bookkeeping for some of the local businesses in Juneau. But when a number of times when my mom came to visit me at school, she noticed that I was habitually placed in the back of the classroom. While other kids were moved around, you know, rotated from the middle seats in the front, I was always in the back. Which is a real hot button for, you know, some of you guys that don't know the history of, you know, Black people sitting in the back, having to be in the back. It was a problem for my mom, and she raised the issue and kept raising the issue until I was moved. I remember finishing both the first grade reading curriculum and also the math curriculum. I finished very early. And rather than being celebrated and rewarded, I was punished for that.
Wow.
And categorized as a nuisance. And at this particular institution, there were multiple grades in one classroom, and I could have just as easily, you know, started working on the next grade. And, you know, basically her solution was to have me sit in the back of the classroom and do nothing. And my mom, again, you came up to the school frequently, saw this, asked questions, and challenged it. And my teacher's solution was that I was going to help the other students. So I was helping other students with their work instead of what I was actually supposed to be in school for, which was to get an education. So the following year, my parents removed me from school and homeschooled me for second grade. And again, you know, socioeconomics definitely plays into this, but they had the luxury to be able to do that.
Wow. Oh my goodness. I don't think that I ever heard that story. I did not know that you experienced that. Oh my goodness. How did that make you feel at the time? I mean, having been like an overachiever and working so hard, and I mean, you're so intelligent anyway, it probably was easy for you to just kind of zoom through things, but you know, instead of getting the accolades that you deserved for that, you know, you were almost kind of like penalized. How did that make you feel?
At first, like certain things, I didn't really know what was happening. You know, you know, when you're six, you don't really know how to process it. You know that you're being treated differently. You know that you did something different than other people. And so I guess it's hard for you to figure out how to process it and how to digest it. And I think one of the best things that I had is I really had parents, or at least my mom was very, very involved, very, very hands-on. And so, you know, some things that would like make a child cry, and feel really bad, she was able to help me work through and, you know, call it for what it was.
Yeah.
And, you know, really did things to, and, you know, we can talk more about this later, but they really did a good job of broadening my aperture and what I saw was possible for me, and interpreting like bad behavior as just that bad behavior, and then giving me really good examples, having me read books, submerging myself in positive Black imagery, positive Black literature, and, you know, people who are very successful despite what somebody, how someone was treating me, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And I am so thankful that you had a mother, and well, both parents, but especially that your mom, you know, who was there to guide you through that and knew how to get involved and knew how to help. You know, help you process, you know, because you're right, at 6 years old, it makes a lot of sense that you wouldn't necessarily know what's going on or know how to feel about it. But to have mom there to lead you, that's a big blessing for sure.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
It really was. Mom.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Janelle. We have Ernest here. Ernest Montz, welcome to the conversation. So glad to have you today.
Thank you.
And Ernest, can you just share a little bit about your history here in Juneau? Like, how long did you live here? What brought your family here? Just and actually, if you can share just where you are right now and what you're doing, just kind of tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, right now I live in Las Vegas, Nevada, and I'm a manager at a Italian restaurant up here.
Awesome.
And in Juneau, I moved there my freshman year of high school. And that was back in 99, 1999. And what brought us there was my dad had got a job at Bartlett Regional Hospital. And we were living in Guam at the time, and they offered to pay for our whole relocation. So that was something that my dad really couldn't pass up because he was trying to get off the island of Guam and it's very expensive. So if they're willing to pay for our whole family's relocation, then that was something he couldn't pass up. And when I got there my freshman year, I was miserable, honestly, at first, because I was leaving a tropical island to move to Juneau. And it was raining. It felt like 24/7. There was nothing but Caucasians, and it was miserable. For the most part, though, when I got there, they were nice. 98% of them were just super nice, and I started quickly, getting acclimated with the people and making friends quickly. And the weather, that took a while longer to get used to,
I can
but
imagine.
making friends. And I would say the first time I encountered racism was maybe about a month in, actually. And I was taking the bus home, and like, I'm not gonna say his name, but like, I was talking to one of the girls on the bus, and I heard one of her friends say to her, "Sorry about the language," but he's like, "Does this nigger live by me?" Like, he was trying to whisper, but I heard him clear as day.
Wow. And this was on the school
He
bus?
was just,
Was
yeah, this was on the bus.
okay.
And I didn't say nothing, but I heard her say, "Stop." She was just trying to whisper back. She's like, "Stop, stop, stop." And she's like, "No, really, does this nigger live by me?" And I'm like, "Really? Like, does this guy think I can't hear him? Like, he's doing a very weak attempt at whispering." And I just left it alone, never confronted him. And it was kind of obvious that he didn't really try to hide his racism. He had like a Confederate flag taped to his trapper keeper and all this stuff. And I experienced it from here and there. And like, it wasn't as bad for me probably as it was for most people over the years, because like, I was an athlete and I was pretty good at the sports, and I knew stories of people that I played football with who were always cool to me to my face. But then at the same time, like, I knew like for a fact that they would turn around and call friends that I knew niggers, and like, not and like friendly as white people say, like I didn't mean it like that. No, they were actually meaning it like, this nigger doesn't belong here type stuff. And they never did that to me when I was on the team with them, or they were never rude to me when I was on the team with them. But like, just hearing that after the fact, like when I wasn't playing with them anymore, that they thought of people that were actually my friends, that they thought of them like that, it like put me through a whole different perspective, and
Yeah.
it wasn't cool. But yeah.
Ernest, can I ask a question really quick?
Absolutely.
First of all, thank you for being willing to share this. My heart hurts just listening. That's a horrible thing to experience freshly here to a new environment, and on your school bus, someone uses that word to describe you and wants to know if they live close to you. Like, that's I can't imagine that. And like you said, having friends or people who you thought were your friends, you guys are playing on the same team, and to think or find out that they think of you in a way that you didn't know they did, it has to be hurtful. How did it shape your outlook on the world or even on yourself?
Well, at first I was like, maybe this was why I was uncomfortable being around all these white people in the first place. In Guam, it was just mostly the local people I was around.
Okay.
And like, my parents, like, they grew up in the States, and they kind of warned me. That's like, the few white people that were in Guam don't really often like Guam because they get treated like how they treat other people in the States, basically. And so when I got to the States, And when I witnessed that, I'm like, oh, so that's what they're talking about. Okay, I got you. And it wasn't right in Guam how they got treated, and it wasn't right how I started getting treated there. And like I said, it got better for me over the years, but like it would still pop up as ugly heck here and there. And it sucked, but I eventually came to know that that's just like the way of the world.
Yeah.
And that shouldn't be. But like, you know, it's just how you have to handle yourself in certain situations. And I did a pretty good job doing it for the most part.
Let me ask you this, because I know that your time is limited and I appreciate you so much for taking the time to do this with us. What would you say to encourage the children of color here who are experiencing racism now?
At this time, I know it's difficult, but like what helped me a lot was athletics and just finding the right support system, like outside of your family, you know?
Yes.
Like getting, like obviously your family will help a lot, but like I was saying, sports helped me a lot. Like once I started making friends, make the right friends and just stick to them, like a diverse group of friends, which I also had. And you don't have to tell them everything, like when you face racism or whatever, because they're not going to understand. Like through all the stuff that's been going on over the last couple of months, I've had friends that I consider some of my best friends to this day call me out of the blue and is like, I'm sorry I had my head in the sand this whole time. And now I'm finally starting to understand. And like, nice. They're not all always going to understand. But when they do, it's a great feeling. Helps you out. Like, just don't expect them to understand, but have that support system, basically. Like, when you just need someone to talk to and hang out with and let yourself know that not all of them are bad, you know?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Ernest. And that makes a lot of sense. I love what you said about diversity. Of course, you know, we mm-hmm. should have the automatic support of our family, and I think most of us do. But having a diverse group, a network is really important as well. And so, yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. Is there anything else that you would like to add before we end?
Well, basically just know that it's not all bad. And yeah, you're going to run into some rough waters, but we're strong people and we'll be all right.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again, Ernest. It was a pleasure to talk to you, and I appreciate it.
All right, Christina. Thank you.
Right now, we're going to go ahead and take just a quick break, and we will be right back. Okay, so we are back, and we have Rob Ridgway joining us. Thank you so much for jumping in this conversation with us today, Rob, and welcome.
No problem. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. So can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and what you do here in Juneau?
Okay, no problem. So yes, Robert Ridgway. Not too many people call me by Robert because I'm named after my dad. So it's easier for my friends when they're calling me to just say, oh, is Rob there? Like, so.
Perfect. Sorry about that. We did discuss that.
Yeah. So I was born and raised here in Juneau, Alaska. I mean, I went away for college for a few years, but then had been back for like another like 16, like after college. In high school or growing up, like I did like four sports. In high school, I played four sports in high school. You know, really now what I do here in Juneau, I've been coaching basketball at the Thunder Mountain High School for the past 11 years. Just worked this last past year for the Office of Children's Services as an admin assistant. Also part-time at Zach Gordon Youth Center, part-time at the Alaska Club. So I've been around a few places here in Juneau, like job-wise, past like few years. Let's see, what else? Well, I have a 16-year-old son, just finished his freshman year. So
awesome.
Single dad, doing the best I possibly can on that aspect. So, but yeah, that's kind of the general where I'm at and where my background comes from.
That is fantastic. I don't think I knew that you were so active with the youth here. So that is great to hear. So can you share just a few happy memories, maybe your best ones of growing up here in Juneau?
You know, my best memories, like I've met a lot of good people here in Juneau. I'm not going to lie about that. Like there are some really good people. You know, sports wise, I've had some really fun times making, you know, all-star teams, and, you know, in high school was, you know, part of, you know, two state championship basketball teams. So those were fun times, you know, playing basketball with, you know, Carlos Boozer. Like, so that's kind of like a thing that a lot of my high school kids like didn't realize, or when they found out, they're like, oh my gosh, you played with Carlos Boozer? I was like, yeah. You know, it was, like he was a good friend of mine, like, you know, back in those days. So sharing those kind of like moments were always good. So I'd say like, yeah, I mean, kind of those types of just meeting friends, good friends that I have now, like through sports, were, you know, good memories here.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And Rob, were there any times growing up here that you experienced any racial issues?
Yes, of course. I mean, it was kind of funny how, you know, so I started off going to school out here in the Valley. Like my, you know, grew up in the Valley, went to Glacier Valley. And I mean, of course I knew I was different from everybody, you know, but a lot of people that I met in like early in Glacier Valley, like had a lot of, you know, white friends, but was never treated differently. You know, everybody, I mean, of course, every now and then you get the kind of look of, you know, somebody new or they never seen me before, like kind of like stare, but then like they try to meet me and talk to me or whatnot. So it was good. But it wasn't until we moved to Lemon Creek in my first year at Harborview School, walking into the school, and it was kind of weird too, because the kid that was standing in kind of like the foyer was Alaska Native kid, who I think was probably like fourth, fifth grade. I'm going into second grade, and you know, his first words were, "Go home, nigger." And I was like, looked around, and I was like, I'm the only one in there. And I was like,
wow,
who are you talking to? I was like, who are you talking to? And he was like, I'm talking to you, nigger. You need to go home. And I was like, okay. You know, that was the first time I ever heard the N-word. You know, sorry for saying it, you know, over the radio or whatnot. But I was just, yeah, like, it just shocked me. And I just walked in the school, kind of like walked by him, ignored the guy. You know, he said it a couple more times. And you know, I went to my classroom and, you know, met my friends and was like, ignoring the whole situation that had just happened. And you know, kind of saw the kid again, like during like recesses, but he didn't say anything then. And then, you know, I played strong the whole day until, you know, I got home. And when my mom asked me how my first day was at my new school, like I just broke down and was crying like in tears and was like, Mom, this kid, you know, called me this word. I've never heard this word before. And, you know, she asked me what he said, and, you know, I told her, and she was like, you know, like, I'm sorry that you had to experience that. And you, like, you've always known that you're different. I was like, yeah, I know that I'm different, but like, what does this mean? And, you know, she gave me like a little quick history lesson of how, like, that's how our people were called and I'm perceived and always been like downgraded because of the color of our skin and, you know, lack of education and, you know, just always pushing, you know, us people of color, like down to a certain level and to never let anybody think that you're less than anybody and to always believe in yourself and like, no matter what, just don't let anybody's words like hurt you and, you know, just ignore that person the next time you see him and just don't let it get to you.
Wow.
You know, and the next day was a little different. You know, the kid kind of approached me again, and I kind of had to show some things that I didn't want to. But, I mean, after that, it was kind of the end. Yeah, kind of had to show my fist a couple of times, and that was that. And nobody actually messed with me after that. So that's kind of like the only fight I've ever been to. You don't really count those as fights, but like as a kid, but I mean, or whatnot, but
yeah,
that's the only time I've had to raise my fist in that kind of situation.
Wow. Well, first I want to say, I'm so sorry that you had to experience that. And even to hear you say you had to ask your mom what that word meant, you know, I mean, you had never even heard it before. And you hear it on your first day of school. I'm sure you understood it wasn't a good thing based on the context. And I can only imagine how hard that must have been. But I also want to say kudos to your mom for the history lesson and for, you know, guiding you through that and just letting you know that it doesn't have anything to do with who you are or your worth. So aside from kind of asserting your, introducing your two fists, what do you think helped you just growing up being different, even if
you know it kind of, you know, what helped me was, you know, my mom, like my dad helped too, but you know, my mom still to this day is always my backbone, like is always the one that I go to and talk to, and she's always just, you know, been there and had like the right words to say, you know. So and like for me, just like first history lesson that she gave me just always kind of like helped me. Like I knew I was, like I said, I knew I was different. I knew I was always going to be different. And, you know, I always embraced and loved myself like for being different. You know, of course, like there's like one moment in time where, you know, where I thought like I wanted to be different just because of, you know, going to school, and then, you know, they touch on Black history, but they don't touch on it a lot. And it's always about like all the, you get all the bad times, or when they show like videos with, you know, about Dr. Martin Luther King and like that kind of stuff. And, you know, and that, like nobody else like feels it the way I do. And like, there's times where I've had to leave classrooms because of, you know, like seeing just like the harsh things that our people have gone through, you know, and then had to take a break and come back in, you know. And there was like a time, like after like seeing like so much of, you know, about our history, it's like, thought like, would it be different if I was white? Would I want to be white? Like here in America, you know, and like thought about it like shortly, but I was like, no, I don't want to, you know, be different. Like I want to be me, and like God bless me and my parents like made me who I am. And like, and I'm proud of that.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's like, that's one thing I always just tried to, you know, be proud of who I am and my background.
Awesome. We're going to go to a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to continue this conversation. So we are back in this conversation with Janelle Billingsley. We had a couple people join us, Rob Ridgway, who's still in the conversation with us now, and we had Ernest Montz, who had to take off. But Janelle, when we were first talking earlier in the segment, you were sharing a little bit about your first experience with racism here in Juneau. Were there any other times that you experienced racism?
I would say that I have a lot of experience with racism, and over the course of my life, I had a lot of instances and things that were done to me. But I think the one I'm going to talk about right now is actually the impetus that caused me to choose to leave Juneau. And, you know, I had a very difficult time with one of my coaches, and I'm specifically to say that it was not my basketball coach, who, you know, that particular coach was one of the most positive influences in my life, and I still communicate with him to this day. But the coach that I'm referring to began to demonstrate blatant racist behavior, you know, the second week of practice, when he, you know, saw some of my abilities, and, you know, while I was stretching, pulled me aside and told me that the only reason why I was able to do what I was able to do is because I'm, you know, essentially, for lack of a better term, anatomically constructed different than other people, and proceeded to tell me that I had an extra muscle that gave me this, you know, unfair advantage over my counterparts. Wow. And, you know, this was when I was a freshman in high school. You know, a whole bunch of other things happened along the way, to include this person's refusal of reporting my times. It took a coach from another sport, actually, you know, because I hadn't been in the high school system, so I didn't really know how it worked. Actually, you know, getting one of the papers from Anchorage and actually showing me that I'd been leading the list in multiple events, if you will. But, you know, I think the culminating moment for me was, so I had a lot of issues with this person over the course of my career, despite winning state championships, multiple state championships as a freshman. My junior year, when they promised, my parents had a nice talk with them, and they promised that they would give me the opportunity to get more exposure. And this included me being able to do a certain number of events on my own, and not being stacked with all of these relay events. And they went back on their word and did not do what they said they were going to do. And it really limited my ability to get some exposure. It was really limiting my opportunities to get a scholarship. And so I had a conversation with both him and my dad after the season was over. And he flat out told me that not only, you know, did I have no intention of allowing you to do this your junior year, but I'm not going to let you do it your senior year either. And, you know, what choice do you have? You know, that there's only one at the time, there's only one high school, and, you know, you can't go anywhere. You're going to be a senior in this, that, and the other. And so at the end of the summer, after basketball camp, I think we were in Oregon that summer, I came to the East Coast and explored my options. And after the first week of high school, I actually left Juno and decided to pursue both my sports on the East Coast, because I flat out refused to be limited and my future to be defined by somebody who was racist, or in my opinion, blatantly racist. There's one other thing I needed to mention. Even when I was a freshman, the person would make comments about the food that I ate. You know, anybody who knows my family, my mom has always been a real health nut, and they snatched some food out of my hand and threw it on the ground. It was a very tumultuous experience having to deal with that person over the years. And even though it was really hard leaving Juno, all my friends, everybody I knew, you know, they were all there, everybody I loved and cared about. It turned out to be one of the best decisions of my life.
Oh my goodness, I can't imagine having experienced something like that. And especially from someone who, you know, is a coach and who should be a mentor and should be someone who you can look up to and who can guide you. How did your parents respond to that? Was there any conversation about it? Or did you guys just say, you know what, you know, just radical acceptance, it is what it is, and pack up and go?
Oh, there are definitely conversations about it. My parents really helped. Well, primarily my dad at this point really helped me, you know, really consider like the options. It was either you're going to accept a closed door, or you were going to embrace the potential for a better opportunity. I didn't know how it was going to turn out or how it was going to do. I had no clue.
Well, I am so glad that things turned out as well as they did for you, and that you guys made the right decision under the circumstances.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for sharing. I know that it takes a lot to be that vulnerable and to share your experiences. So thank you to you, Janelle, and to you as well, Rob. You guys have both been incredibly generous with your time, and I appreciate it. What would you say to people who think that there is no racism in Juno? And I know that it seems like an odd question to ask, because we've shared several stories here and several accounts of racism experienced firsthand. But to those who still think, you know, maybe it was you know, that was way back then, or maybe that was kind of a one-off situation. What would you say to those people?
You know, I think the thing I would say is, in some ways, I feel somewhat unqualified to comment on the status of race relations in Juneau, because I haven't, you know, I've come home, I've visited, but I haven't actually lived there in quite some time. I would say that I've definitely heard from friends, lifelong friends who are minorities, who cry and who are, you know, who vocalize their pain and what they experience in Juneau. And I would just challenge people who take that position. It is very obvious, in my opinion, that racism still exists and is still very much a part of the fabric of this country. And it's, you know, it's been like that since, I would say, like colonialism, right? Like, and this idea that we're trying to suggest, you know, trying to suggest that Alaska in some way or Juneau in some way is immune to that just really doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, we have people coming from the lower 48 moving to Juneau all the time, and they carry their values with them. So, you know, just like we're seeing examples in other areas of the country, I think I would challenge you to ask yourself, why do you think it would be different? And, you know, even though the final thing I would say is that even though we have a very small Black population, African-American population in Juneau, there are other minority groups. And I would invite you to ask yourself to take a look at what you're seeing around you, you know, do some research on what microaggressions are and see whether or not you see that going on around you. And, you know, because a lot of people are saying it is happening.
Rob, would you like to add anything to that?
I would just say that, yes, I mean, for those that haven't experienced those few people of color or whatnot, like, good for them that they haven't experienced it, but also, like, I bet they probably have, but they're just not really seeing it, or they're just, since they've grown up and just thought a certain way, like, they're just not really looking at the whole microscope, and they've probably been exposed to it, but they're just blatantly not seeing it because it's there. I mean, it's like the worst, like for me, that I've experienced it is those people that try to friend you and are all nice to you, to your face. And then those are the ones that are either on Facebook or to their other friends, and they're just bad mouthing, you know, African Americans or other people of different ethnicities because of, you know, not even knowing people, you know. And I've found that like quite a bit, like in this town particularly, that, yeah, a lot of people that are fake to your face, but, you know, and then a certain way, like in their, you know, in their real life, you know. So like I would just say, like, you know, like it's good that they haven't experienced it, but don't think that it's not going to be a time in their life that they're going to come across like something of this nature.
Absolutely. Thanks, Rob. And to that, I would add, if someone is different, if they look different from you and they look different from the majority, my advice would be to assume that they're having a different experience from you. And I think that we all kind of miss that. We tend to look at everything through our own lens, and sometimes we forget to step outside of ourselves and have some empathy and put ourselves in another person's shoes. And so, you know, one thing I had shared earlier before we had started recording this conversation was when I was in middle school and they used to check for lice. I don't even know if they still do that in school now, but they used to check our scalps for lice. And my teacher said that she loved checking my scalp for lice because I already had my hair in pigtails, so she could see my scalp. But also because since Black people use grease on our hair to moisturize it, she didn't think that I can get lice, that like lice can't live in my scalp because of the products that Black people use in their hair. Little things like that, that if you're sensitive, especially as a child, you know, that can be hurtful, because why am I being singled out? Like, why is my teacher saying this about me, and what's wrong with my hair, and that kind of thing. And so we'll go ahead and close out here. And I just want to ask, there are a lot of people, especially since the Black Lives Matter movement has really gained a lot of momentum in the past few months, who are asking, as someone who is Caucasian, asking, how can we support people of color and how can we stand in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement? What would you say to those people who are asking?
You know, all of us went to the same school, and mm-hmm. we all had very similar educational experiences, but then when you look around at, you know, going through town and you look at who's in leadership positions and, you know, who has the white collar jobs, it tells a very different story. So I know that people don't think that racism happens, and I know that there's some minorities that do not feel like it's happening, but, you know, I invite you to take a look at that. You know, why is it that the outcomes are very different, even though we all had access to the same thing? Something has to be going on there.
Thank you. Thank you. That was a great point.
For me, I would say these people need to truly listen. Listen to any friend of yours that is of color or is African American. If they have something that they have to get off their chest or like want to talk to you about, like truly listen and don't like interrupt. Don't put your two cents in. Just be there for that person. Just be an ear and listen to everything that they have to say, and then have empathy like towards it and show them like love or give them a hug or anything like that. Or just be there to help. Just be there to listen. And then like, yes, if, you know, if they've asked you a question or like how you feel, like, yeah, then you could chime in. But just be that listening ear that somebody needs.
Excellent advice. Thank you, Rob.
Yeah, I love what Rob said. I think that listening is so important because, you know, inherently, you know, just systemically, because of much of the racism has been based upon, you know, visible minorities and, you know, being visibly different. It's really frustrating when someone who doesn't have that experience says it doesn't happen, when, you know, it definitely does. So the listening part is really important. I would also encourage my Caucasian sisters and brothers to consider how they may have knowingly or unknowingly participated in the system of racism, and really genuinely ask yourself how you might make Juno a better place for everyone. You know, right now we need ideas and solutions, no matter where they come from. We need all hands on deck, regardless of color. And I feel that the way that we've been groomed to think about other people and how we socialize with other people is preventing us from doing that. I would invite all of you to, you know, like, educate yourself on the history of this country and systemic racism. Consider how microaggressions, microassaults, microinsults, you know, consider how that they show themselves in the community, and then try to take action to eradicate it. Because we as a country, as a community in Juneau, cannot afford to allow this to continue.
Well said, Janelle. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time, and to you, Rob, appreciate your time as well. And we really hope that as listeners, you have gained some insight, and we've given you something to think about, and most importantly, something to take away from this conversation that you can do to make a change in your immediate circle of influence. So our goal was to have open communication and heartwarming conversation, and I believe that we did that today, and I hope that you enjoyed it. Thank you so much.